everybody.
Hello.
This is Zach.
This is Stuart.
And this is the Backbury Super Show. This is the main show. Episode 26.
Mm-hmm.
This is Atomic Blonde, or Who's Doing What Now?
Yeah, this is why I have this great sweater vest with no undershirts.
Yeah.
I look grungy as hell.
Shaved head. Yeah, nice.
That's right.
So yeah, well, we're talking about Atomic Blonde, the movie.
Yes.
I ordered the graphic novel on Amazon, but did not get it in time to compare.
Oh.
So, that's in the mail somewhere. Yeah.
I didn't know that you did that.
Yeah. Well, Amazon's doing this weird thing now where, like, even though I have Prime, 2-day shipping for them apparently means, like, a week and a half.
Huh. I do not have Prime. So maybe
And I also ordered, it's based on a graphic novel called The Coldest City.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the prequel comic, too, that focuses more on David Percival.
Yeah.
The guy that you're dressed like. called Coldest Winter. So I look forward to reading those whenever they get in.
Nice.
Movie came out in 2017.
Yeah, it's something that's very recent. And I did not know it was actually based on a graphic novel until you told me.
Yeah.
Because the first time I actually watched it was about a week or two ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, over at your place.
Yeah, yeah. I really like this movie. It, like I said, came out in 2017. The budget for it was $30
million. Okay.
And the box office was $100
million. That's good returns.
It's good returns. I don't know how much they spent on marketing, because that's never included with the budget. It's just the budget for the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like it was poorly promoted.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing a couple of trailers. Like, I think one showed before Wonder Woman, maybe.
Hmm.
But yeah, like, I don't remember seeing a whole lot of trailers other than, like, internet stuff.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes on it, which I don't trust 100% of the time. 78%, which is actually really high, given that it's a female-led movie.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes tends to skew downward the more women are in the cast, because people are shitheads.
Yeah, that's the internet.
The cinema score
for
this...
Not all the internet, but...
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, the people that would take the time to do something like that.
Yeah.
cinema score, which I do trust a little bit more, because they actually interview people leaving the movie... it's scored a B.
Okay.
Let's see. Richard Roper, who took over Roger Ebert's Chicago Sun-Times column, gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars.
All right.
Peter Travers gave it 3 out of 4 stars for Rolling Stone. Jake Coyle with the Associated Press gave it a 2 out of 4. His take on it was that it was, quote, largely vacant, hyper-stylistic romp that trades on the thick Cold War atmosphere of far better films.
Oh, man, that's
rough.
That
is fucking rough.
Yeah.
I feel like this is probably one of the more enjoyable spy movies of the past, like, 10 years.
Yeah, I didn't know that was going to be a spy movie. I kind of...
Oh, you didn't?
No, I went in blind. So I didn't do any research before I actually...
Did you go in blind, or did you go in cold?
Ah! Oh, man.
Yeah, look at that spike.
yeah, I went in cold. So I didn't do any research before I watched this movie, but afterwards I really did enjoy it, but we'll get to that later on.
Yeah, yeah, because this is just kind of the background of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So David Leitch, the director, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm going to say Leitch because it's L-E-I-T-C-H.
Yeah, sounds good.
He directed, his debut directorial role was in this. He's a former stuntman and a fight choreographer.
Yeah, and you can really tell from this movie.
Well, so, like, he had I think it was uncredited directorial credit for, John Wick.
Yes.
Because he did so much of the fight choreography for that, and a lot of the John Wick fight choreography, like this, is up close in a way that, like, he was holding the camera.
Yeah. which is really cool. And this movie was also, it came out during the same time as John Wick too.
Yeah, yeah. So it, let's see, Charlize Theron, who produced it and stars in it,
mm-hmm.
Claims that a sequel is in development.
Oh,
which is
okay.
is interesting. So it'll be
yeah
new material unless they get another graphic novel to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
Leitch discussed a John Wick Atomic Blonde crossover.
That would be really cool.
Theron has had this in her production company, in her stable, more or less, since 2012.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much right after the graphic novel was published,
they got the
studio
rights.
Purchased the rights. Yeah. So Leitch left John Wick to direct this.
Oh, okay.
Nice. He was supposed to direct John Wick 2. He did direct Deadpool 2 after
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
You can see kind of a theme in his movies. He likes the, like, very... I'll call them quieter action movies, because there's a lot of, like, graphic brutality in them, but they're not, yeah. like, big explosion fests, necessarily.
Yeah, where it's just dominated by this action.
Yeah, yeah. David Bowie was supposed to play a part in this, but he turned it down shortly before his death.
Yeah. It would have been really interesting to see him.
It would have been interesting. I feel like, I'm a huge David Bowie fan. I feel like when he's in movies, though, they tend not to do very well because he plays very peculiar parts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I love Man Who Fell to Earth, which is a movie he did kind of in the height of his, like, Ziggy Stardust, Aladdin Insane type stuff in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very slow movie. It's
I've
very
never
good.
Seen it. Maybe we can talk
yeah,
about
maybe
it.
Maybe we can talk about it at some point. He's in Labyrinth, which is my hands-down favorite movie.
Yeah.
It did not
just
do well
in general?
Either.
It's yeah. your favorite movie in
mm-hmm.
general? Wow.
Yep, yep.
We'll have to talk more about that later.
Yeah.
But let's focus on Atomic Blonde.
We'll focus on Atomic Blonde. I was reading that Charlize Theron worked with 8 different personal trainers every day.
Yeah.
I
mean, her routine was on point.
Yeah.
I will say she was looking good.
Well, so she cracked her teeth from clenching her jaws and had to get them fixed. Like, she cracked the teeth
wow.
on, like, the left side of her face. And then she also broke a rib.
Yeah.
Her training for this overlapped with Keanu Reeves' training for John Wick 2, because they use the same personal trainers.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do. And then, so the two of them were actually sparring together frequently.
Yeah, which I thought was super cool because...
Yeah, they basically agreed from everything I've read, they agreed to, not hold back, and so
yeah.
they were just literally beating the shit out of
yeah,
each other.
Yeah, throwing, like, actual punches and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Actual punches.
Which is ridiculous when you're trying to, you know, film for a movie and everything like that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. There's a quote, I forget the actor who did it, I think it's a Laurence Olivier, was saying it to Dustin Hoffman during Marathon Man,
mm-hmm.
Because Hoffman has had a reputation for being kind of a method actor and getting super into roles and, like, doing things for real that his character did,
yeah.
and... you know, the quote is, you know, dear boy, there's this thing called acting.
Yeah.
You don't actually have to take a punch in the face yeah. to play a spy who takes a punch in the face. But yeah, so that's all the background on this, because it's a fairly recent movie, so there's not a whole lot of, like, Easter eggs and stuff.
No.
So this will probably be a shorter episode.
A little bit, yeah.
Talking about the movie...
So it's based... the timeline is right when the Berlin Wall was about to fall.
Yeah, it's so it's set maybe a week
yeah.
before the wall fell.
Which is a really cool idea.
Yeah.
I don't think too many spy movies sort of explore that, because that was an area of, like, uncertainty and, like...
A lot of chaos.
Yeah, and you had your operatives in this really unstable area.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen. And if that wall does fall down, you want to make sure all of your information gets burned to the ground.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're going to have allies, you don't want your new allies to know how much of their private intel you have.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the movie opens with a, you don't know it at the time, but he is a intelligence officer with MI6,
mm-hmm.
Getting killed by a communist criminal.
Yeah, some Russian guy with a really good beard.
Yeah, he basically steals a knock list. It's a non-official cover list for operatives.
Yes. Which he hides in his watch.
Yep. The MI6 sends in Charlize Theron's character to recover this list.
And this is all sort of being told from her perspective as she's getting basically debriefed after this mission.
Exactly, yeah. So she's in a room with her section chief and John Goodman playing a CIA section chief. Yeah.
And I think they chose a lot of good actors for this particular role, because I felt like a lot of people gave probably some of their, not best performances, but really good performances.
Yeah, yeah. At no point in the movie did I feel like anyone was kind of ham-handedly playing up things.
Yeah.
You have people like James McAvoy's character, who is David Percival. He is the Berlin section chief. They tell her when they're briefing her before her trip to Berlin that he's quote unquote gone native, and then it cuts to him in an underground party in the Eastern Bloc where he's trading jeans for secrets,
or like Playboys for secrets, things that you can get from the West.
Yeah, he is a wild and crazy character. He's probably my favorite character.
I will say yes, he kind of deals the show a little bit.
Yeah.
Just the way that he acts. Again, this movie is based off of a graphic novel, but I don't think it goes too gonzo-y. I think a lot of it is kind of rooted in everyday life, where, you know, when the action happens, you don't have to suspend your disbelief too much. You can sort of be like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, It's for a spy movie, it's realistic enough, I think, because the movie opens Charlize Theron's character is soaking her bruised and battered body in an ice bath.
Yeah.
That's how we're introduced to her. She's got a black eye during the debriefing because...
Did they ever mention her name?
Lorraine Broughton.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's
probably her cover name.
Okay.
The thing that I like about this, though, is the violence in it is extremely brutal, but it's about in line with what I would expect. Like...
Yeah, I found it really interesting. She doesn't actually use, like, a gun until the very end.
Yeah, like, she'll have one in her hand, but... So, like, you know, in James Bond movies, which I dearly love James Bond, there's a lot of gunfire. If you're in a city, and it is locked down by communist patrol, you're not going to want to have a gunfight, because gunshots in a city, like, people notice that.
Yeah.
She's trying to maintain a cover and get information, get a defector from the communist government into Western Berlin, or West Berlin.
Yeah, and it's because he has memorized the particular list.
Yeah, the knock list. So he can give them all of the information on their operatives.
Because her mission was basically to recover the watch. When she found out that the watch was in Soviet hands, she tried to recover it, but she also found out that another person had memorized this list.
Yeah.
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 And it was a contact of what was his character's name?
Percival,
yes. Yeah.
He is an insane character, by the way. I love him, yes. David Percival. He does things like he's... To get from East Germany to... Or East Berlin to West Berlin, he kills two soldiers, steals their car, sets it on fire, and then rams it into the wall while rolling out of it so that he can crawl into a... like an irrigation type duct or a sewage duct or whatever, yeah. And basically go underneath the wall.
Yeah.
Which I said to you when we were watching it, I like to think that whenever he has to get across the wall, he does something gonzo batshit.
Yeah. Trying to like get out. Yeah.
Just to cover his tracks.
And I will say that there's a lot of intrigue in this movie as well.
Yeah.
Because throughout the movie, they find out that somebody's actually a double agent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Named Satchel.
Satchel, yeah.
It basically follows her trying to track down this list and help get this defector out of East Berlin. All the while, David Percival is acting batshit.
Yeah.
And is being set up as this double agent. Because he does do a lot of shady things.
Yeah.
That you would expect someone who's been...
Who's been living there and been living on both sides of the wall, basically.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, like, he'll do things like... When she first flies into Germany, she gets picked up by Soviet agents on the western side of Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
Because Percival's late in picking her up, she just kind of... She's suspicious, but she... trust that, okay, maybe these guys are supposed to be picking me up, and yeah. Then it turns out in the car ride that they unveil that they're Soviet officers, and so she starts a fight and causes a car accident to get out of it.
Yeah.
And Percival shows up, takes her in his car, and then shoves one of the officers in the trunk of his 911, and then they drop it off at the Soviet embassy in West Berlin.
With the officer still.
With the officer, they just dump his body out in front of the embassy.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah, send the message.
I mean, he's the section chief. I would assume if they have an intelligence network worth anything, like, they already know that he's a spy. Like,
yeah.
They don't know who she is, but they know who he is. So it doesn't matter if he does things like that.
Yeah. And then, you know, you get introduced to another spy for the,
The French intelligence agency, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because you said that the main character in the comics is actually male.
Yeah, I feel, and again, I have not read them yet. Yeah. I want to say I read somewhere where the character is male, and so he seduces this French intelligence operative. Her character is a woman, obviously, in the movie, and so she seduces this female French intelligence operative.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I can't see James Bond seducing a male operative for information.
Yeah.
Because
you know that she's definitely doing it for the information, but she ends up becoming attracted to this woman. Like,
yeah, she develops feelings. For this operative.
Yeah. Which I guess is, like, rule number one, don't ever get feelings if you're a spy.
Yeah, because like it comes out that the French intelligence officer, like, she's doing it because it's fun. Like, she's not really an operator, so to speak, in the same way that Percival and Lorraine are operators, and that they will get their hands dirty.
And it seems like she's very green. Like, one of her first attempts at doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is a funny scene where there's, it's depicting them, her seducing this French agent, and it cuts back to them in the debriefing room, and all of the men at the table are obviously very uncomfortable because this is 1980s England, where I believe homosexuality is still a crime.
Yeah, which is insane to think about that, like, people would deem that a crime. Like,
yeah,
you know, what you do in your personal life.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the British government, even though Alan Turing is pretty much responsible for us cracking the Germans' code, found out he was gay, and so they chemically castrated him, and it's probably why he killed himself. In the 50s. I don't know if that's the last time that they castrated someone for homosexuality, but in the 80s, I think it was pretty much still illegal.
Yeah.
Which is gross and monstrous.
Yeah.
So then we cut back in the film to Lorraine going back and forth with how to get this defector to the West Berlin side.
Yeah, because they had pretty much given up on the watch.
Yeah, they've given up on the watch at this point. Yeah. Because Percival claims that he cannot track it down, but he actually kills the guy who stole it from the original MI6 agent, and he's just kind of sitting on it.
Yeah. And again, you know, this is a spy movie, so there's a lot of twists and turn.
There are.
So we do highly recommend watching this movie. We're probably not doing it too much justice trying to explain
recounting it.
Just because, again, it's a spy movie, so there's a lot of like nuances and cutaways of like you don't know exactly what's going on, because I know we were watching it together and I was kind of on the edge of my seat because I wasn't sure exactly what was happening, and I had these guests, and I think I was telling you the guests and you're just like, nope.
Nope. Guess again. Okay, so one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Yes, this would be my favorite scene as well.
So Lorraine and her contact in East Berlin have come up with this plan that Percival is a part of, where this defector and his wife and daughter will be taken across the wall during one of the protests.
Yeah. Though there, it was kind of a curveball that was thrown at them that his wife and his kid was going to come.
Yeah, so it was kind of a last minute thing. Her contact was like, I don't think I have the passports for this, but
yeah,
let me see what I got.
Because she had a younger, I guess, hip who was like inciting people to riot.
Yeah, so his network, her contact there had a network. And he arranged for everyone, which I kind of want to go back and see if any of the protests, if there was a large section of people with black umbrellas. I don't think so, but it would be cool if they worked that little detail in.
It would be.
And they're protesting, and they give them cover because they know that Lorraine and Percival are being watched.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gives them this cover to get close enough to the wall that they can kind of extract him.
Yeah.
At this point, Percival pulls out a silenced handgun and, unbeknownst to Lorraine, shoots the defector in the stomach.
Yeah, which, you know, kind of sends off signals of, like, maybe he's the double agent since he's killing this guy that they're trying to get across.
Yeah. So I can't remember if they say whether the guy's wife and daughter get to the other side.
I think they do. Yes.
So Lorraine has this guy who is gut shot. She shoves him into a car, and then there's a very cool chase sequence where I know that there are edit points in there, but it's edited very fine, so you can't, like, she's driving backwards, she's being chased.
Yeah.
She fires a gun a couple of times at pursuers.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the first point that she actually shoots anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, this is well towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
They then get into a,
an
apartment building, while they're being pursued by Soviet operators. And Lorraine basically tells the defector to stay in one spot, and then there's a fight scene where she fights up their way up into and out of the building.
Yeah.
And
it's one shot.
It's one take until that scene towards the end where they're all in the same room.
Yeah. Which is insane because it's about, what, like 15, maybe?
It's probably 10 minutes. 10 minutes. Close to 10 minutes, yeah. of a single take where she's...
fighting. It's choreography.
Fighting, yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's an intense scene where she's punching and kicking and kind of clawing their way out of this building. And so by the end of it, when some of the operators actually catch up with them, because everyone's been fighting, there's a really cool scene where they're in a fist fight, but they've been fighting very hard and very strenuously for about 10 minutes. And you can tell they're out of breath. Yeah. They look very weary. And it's like, okay, whoever lands a punch this time is probably going to win.
Yeah. It's... I mean, and the actors look like they're tired, like they're weary because, yeah. again, it was a very physical scene,
yeah.
where people are moving up and down stairs. There's a lot of fist fight. There's a lot of a bit of gunplay of people just kind of like pulling out guns and disarming guns.
Yeah.
It was a really, really cool scene to watch. And you know that there was a lot of love that went into that scene, especially yeah. with the director being a fight choreographer.
Yeah.
You could tell that there was a lot of cool shots. There was a lot of different angles.
Yeah.
And I would say that was probably one of my favorite scenes yeah. in the movie.
Well, and I was telling you this, we didn't watch the behind the scenes, but there was a little behind the scenes thing on that fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the director is in the middle of the fight scene, like inches away from people with this camera. So yeah. like everything had to be timed perfectly and choreographed down to the step.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting watching that documentary on the Blu-ray because there are scenes where, like, you know, she punches that guy and he falls backwards down the stairs.
Yeah.
And in the behind the scenes, he obviously falls on, like, these big blue, like, gym pads.
Yeah. But those stairs are, like, metal stairs.
Yeah, like, so. He's still falling backwards yeah. downstairs and he's got to look like he's unconscious. But, like... in the movie, you can't tell. Like, they went back and digitally took out all of the mats and pads and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it looks insanely brutal.
Yeah. And, I mean, it looks really good, too. And with him being a, you know, having this experience as a fight choreographer, it's really interesting that he's handling the camera because yeah. he probably knows where to be at and what kind of shot to take.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, Lorraine gets the defector into a car and then they're sideswiped, and the defector is trapped in the car there and, goes into the river. And so he's dead.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
Yeah. At this point, I think Lorraine either saw or is heavily suspicious of Percival yes. being a double agent.
Yes. And the thing is, she realizes that he must have planted a bug on her yeah. because he has all this information about where she's going and what she's been doing. So she starts realizing that she needs to like start looking around her apartment because he's been in, not her apartment, her hotel room. He's been there, and then she finds the bug that he planted on her coat.
In her jacket.
Yeah.
Which, it's funny, like, earlier in the movie, he says, like, he tells her, if I were to follow you, you would not know.
Yeah.
I like that, because it shows he is crazy and batshit as he is, he's still a very good operator.
He's a perfect, yeah. And it's interesting, because... she also carries a wire on herself.
Yeah.
So she records all the conversations that she has with other people.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at you and saying, yeah, that's smart. Like, if you are an agent, you should record, like, everything just yeah. to, like, have some sort of proof because no one's really going to believe your word because you're an agent and you're probably lying the majority of your time.
Yeah, yeah, like you would have to be very good at lying, I would assume,
yeah.
to be a good operative.
And now, you know, in the digital age, I bet it's not that hard to have, like, a digital recorder on you or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume that, 9 times out of 10, I'm sure that there are still operators that do similar things, like, in person, but I wouldn't be surprised if 9 times out of 10, you're looking at, like, digital, like, cybersecurity type. Pipe attacks to gather information rather than meeting someone in a park or at a bench and saying a phrase and then handing them an envelope and
it's now all pretty much computerized where people are either like hacking into stuff or doing like cyber not cyber crimes but like cyber counterintelligence.
Yeah, at that point, she thinks that Percival is Satchel.
Yes.
Percival goes to the French operative and murders her.
Yes,
to tie up that loose end, because he knows that she's intelligence. She's French intelligence.
Mm-hmm. And he knows that she has been feeding information to Lorraine.
I think the topic comes up of him finding a French UF transmitter.
Right.
Which, I think I turned to you and I was like, now, call me crazy, but if I were in the spy business, I would make sure not to use equipment from my home country.
Yeah.
That was traceable to that.
Or even use equipment from another country to throw them off your trail.
Yeah, just throw them off the trail, which, again, she's green. She doesn't necessarily know the ins and outs of these sorts of things. But regardless, Percival kills her. Mm-hmm. Lorraine arrives maybe 30 seconds too late. And then she tracks him down because she feels that he is Satchel and that he has the watch with the knock list, which is their one option now because the defector, who had a photographic memory, has been killed.
And the movie is also kind of framing him as Satchel as well.
Yeah.
Because it really is trying to point you to that road. And I believed it. When I was watching the movie, I thought it was...
Oh, yeah. In his final... in his final kind of monologue, when Lorraine approaches him, he accuses her of being Satchel.
Yes.
Which is a curveball.
Yeah.
that they throw you. And she kills him, partly in revenge for the French intelligence officer.
Because she did have feelings for her.
Yeah. And then she takes the watch and she delivers it. To MI6.
No. She doesn't deliver it to MI6. No? Nope. Because when she gets back, she says, oh, the watch, I couldn't find the watch.
Oh, right. Because, okay, yeah, so...
Because this kind of gets to the point of them debriefing, and they're asking her, well, did, what's his character's name? The guy.
Percival?
Yeah, did Percival have the watch? And she said, no, he didn't have the watch.
Oh, but right, you and see, cuts to her digging it out of his pocket.
Yeah. So that even sets you up even more that, oh, well, she's the double agent.
Yeah.
Because afterwards she goes and she meets with the Russians.
Yeah, afterwards she meets with the Russians. She's referred to as Satchel by the intelligence officer there.
Mm-hmm.
In a feat that I would call the most unrealistic portion of this movie.
Yeah.
Which I think it's kind of cool.
It's fine.
When she hands off the watch to him, just in terms of people's swagger, the guy that she, that was trying to pick her up at the airport that she bashed his hand with her stiletto.
Yeah.
Shows up and he's screwing a silencer onto the barrel of his gun. And he's just like, okay, like, 8 guys come in, and they start putting plastic down on the ground, and he's like, all right, we know what's going down. Be professional. Just stand over that plastic.
Yeah.
She manages to fight her way out, even though she's unarmed, grab one of their guns, and then there's this gunfight in a small room.
She's not unarmed. She has a gun in the ice bucket.
Right.
Where but, she but pulls I mean, out.
Initially, and... she's standing away from the ice, but she doesn't have a gun on her.
Yeah, well, but that's true.
She has one secreted away.
Yeah.
So she fights her way out of that and then kills the intelligence operative that she handed the watch to.
Yeah, and that's probably the biggest scene where you have to go, okay, all right, well. All right,
this is a standard spy movie. Okay, yeah, yeah, like, I feel like that scene's the weakest.
Yeah.
It's cool, but it's I think it's the most out of place for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
And then after the debrief, she meets back up with John Goodman's character, who's a member of the CIA.
Yes.
And it turns out that
she's a triple agent.
She's a triple agent. She is actually a CIA agent. Her English accent is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because Charlize Theron's a very good actor who speaks with dialogue coaches and knows how to change her accent.
Yeah, which is awesome. So, yeah.
So, she's a triple agent. Ta-da!
So, MI6 into KGB into CIA.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, triple agents.
Really, really cool.
Yeah. And again, it wasn't super telegraphed. So, I was just surprised. I did not expect that. There's even a little banter between her and John Goodman's character. Yeah. Where at the beginning of the movie, she's basically saying, oh, CIA doesn't need to be in here. Yeah. He's like, oh, I do need to be in here. So, under her breath, she mutters...
She calls him a cocksucker under her breath, yeah. And he overhears it and gets really angry. And then on the plane later, he's like, really, cocksucker is what you called me?
Yeah, where there was that nice banter of, like, I was in on it. Thanks for playing it up.
Yeah, well, and I like the scene where she was just like, CIA doesn't need to be here. Yeah. He's like, okay, I can leave this room, but I'll just be behind that mirror with everyone else. And it's really crowded back there.
So I do feel like there was a lot of good chemistry.
Yeah.
With her character and John Goodman's character. I forget his character.
Yeah, I mean, he's only in, like, three scenes.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's a good movie. I think for the most part, I would imagine that it's fairly accurate as to the type of thing that would happen during the Cold War.
Yeah.
There's some crazy shit that went down. Like, read any book, like, any reputable book, obviously, on, like, the history of the CIA or OSS, and it's like, man, you were a bunch of sneaky bastards.
Yeah. And it was there was a great scene where Percival was basically burning all of his information as the wall fell down because he didn't want anybody seeing who he was, you know, working with or what kind of information he had dug up.
Yeah, like he had piles of information in his apartment that he just set on fire and left the apartment.
Yeah.
Presumably it's going to burn down. Just salting the earth.
Yeah.
That way there's no record of anything that he gathered.
Yeah. Because it was such an unplanned thing. It was such a moment in time where everything just clicked right and the wall just started falling down and people were just scrambling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting point in history where I think more people should explore it.
Yeah.
Be it in their own story or some sort of fictional thing where you can play up that paranoia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, how do you feel about the movie? Like, would you recommend it to
everyone?
Did you have any quibbles with it that you didn't?
No, not really. I thought it was a very well put together spy movie.
Yeah.
The action was on point. I don't think that the action took up the majority of time. I feel like there was a lot of,
there's a lot of boring talky bits.
No, not for
an action movie. Like, I'm calling them boring, like, because most people, I think, going into a spy movie are expecting, like, bang, bang, shooty, whereas this is more like Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. So, more like John le Carré than Ian Fleming.
Yeah. So I appreciate that. I think they had a nice balance between, again, the action versus the whole espionage part of it.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out the ending, so that's always fun when you're, you know, you get surprised and you get that hook, that twist.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. And, yeah, I would recommend it to people who enjoy spy movies. I feel like if spy movies aren't your kind of genre that you enjoy, you might not enjoy it as much.
Sure.
But I do think that it is a good spy movie. What about you?
Yeah. I really, really liked it because I love all sorts of spy shit. Like, I really want to go to one of these, like, James Bond conventions if I get the chance.
Now, do you think this movie was better than James Bond? Or so, I'm not a big James Bond fan. I've only seen, like, 3 of the movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I know that there's a lot of James Bond movies out there to compare it to.
24.
Yeah, 24 geez. Of them. God, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Would you, like, on the spectrum of really bad James Bond movie versus really good James Bond movie, where would you kind of, like, put this movie comparatively?
I mean,
if you can compare it.
I it's not really comparable. Like,
okay.
Because I don't want to say it's better than a James Bond movie because it's different.
Yeah, it is different.
It's
especially
like I said,
with the main character being female.
Yeah.
It kind of takes a different perspective. And
yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that this movie is probably the best argument for making a new franchise too. Okay. Because there's a lot of cool scenes in this that wouldn't really work in a James Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on the way they've been, like even the Daniel Craig movies that are supposed to be more like quote unquote realistic.
No.
There's far more bang bang shooty than,
oh, really?
Than the espionage type stuff.
Huh.
Then
so there's a lot of action.
So this is probably a more real, like I said, more realistic portrayal. It's more Le Carre rather than Fleming.
Yeah.
That being said, it's still got some really cool action scenes in it because of who the director is,
mm-hmm,
and Charlize Theron wanting to do things for real.
Yeah. Gosh.
The stunts in this are great. There's one stunt in particular where she flies out of a...
Oh, yeah, that was really cool.
Out of the apartment, using one of the guys trying to catch her as an anchor.
Yeah, and she has a gardening hose basically tied around him, and she jumps out of the window with her gardening hose, and the guy is pretty much an anchor.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool things in this. I like it about as much as I like James Bond.
Okay.
The type of movie that it is, I would say it's much better than something like Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, which the book is good, but that movie, I can't get into it.
I've never seen it. I've never seen that.
I mean, it's good. It's very quiet and it's very slow.
Okay.
And it's so realistic that it's like, okay, well, you're sucking any of the enjoyment of this out of
it. Yeah, out of the fun. Mm.
But no, like Atomic Blonde, I highly recommend it.
Okay.
It's very stylized. The soundtrack really sets
you. Oh gosh, yeah, the soundtrack was really good.
Yeah, the soundtracks really set you in the time, mm-hmm, of 88, 89.
Yeah. It brought back some old memories.
Yeah.
And most of them are in, like, German and...
Yeah, they have Nana playing in there. Mm-hmm. When you're introduced to Lorraine's character, when she's, like, in that ice bath, they have David Bowie's Cat People playing in the background, which is really cool. There's lots of Depeche Mode in there, lots of other pop songs from the late 80s. I kind of want to own the soundtrack to this, but I have it. It's just, it's on a bunch of different albums.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I feel like we're kind of petering out on this one. I have nothing to say that's really bad about this movie. The acting was great, soundtrack's great, stunts.
Yeah,
story.
It was well paced too.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like it weared out its welcome. I think it was like an hour and 30, an hour and 40.
I think it's right at 2 hours.
2 hours?
It doesn't feel like 2 hours. It moves along very quickly.
Yeah.
I
don't think that there was much that could have been cut if you needed to cut some things.
Yeah, I don't think that I would have cut anything, because, like you said, it's a very twisty-turny movie. And so, like, at the end, I was like, oh, okay, so she's a double agent. And it's like, oh, wait, no, she's a triple agent. Yeah. I didn't foresee any of that.
Yeah.
But super fun. I liked it.
I give it 2 thumbs up.
I do as well. So now you can take off that weird sweater vest and put on whatever you're wearing for our next recording.
No, man.
That sweater vest too comfortable?
Yeah. I get to air out my pits.
So yeah, with that, send us an email at backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
Yep. Check out our Facebook. That's Backrows Super Show. It's all four
separate words.
Yep.
We have nerd fights that we're posting every 3 days, because that seems to be, like, the third day is just for the stragglers who may see it because someone else commented on it. Most people tend to vote the first or second day.
Yeah.
So instead
people's attention spans are short.
Yeah, well, instead of a week, I feel like a week is overkill.
Yeah,
I feel like that, 3 days, I feel like, is a good medium, but if you
disagree, send us an email.
Yeah, send us an email. The book club book is Brandon Sanderson's Warbreaker.
Warbreaker.
And then we will be in the first week of April at 221 BCon.
Yeah.
Because thankfully they have invited us back.
Yeah.
So we'll be
super
there.
Great, and we definitely appreciate that. So.
Yeah, both of us like Sherlock Holmes. We're not, I wouldn't call myself a Sherlockian, but I do appreciate all the media around Sherlock.
Yeah, definitely. And if you guys see us there, feel free to say hey.
Yeah, if you want to know generally what it's like, this was the first convention coverage that you and I did last year.
Yeah, you can listen back in our archives.
Yeah, to see what we think. Now, we weren't using this nice microphone that Stuart has purchased at the time, so the recording is a little wishy-washy, but...
A little rough.
But, you know, we do a pretty good job. It's almost 2 hours worth of coverage. And I feel like it gives a really good sense of what that convention is like. So we'll see you there first weekend in April.
Mm-hmm.
If you go. And
that's about it.
The next main show will be on Avatar, The Last Airbender.
The first book.
Just the first book, which it's...
Water.
First season, call it books in the movie or in the show, but it's the first season. I think it's only like 20 episodes.
I think 24.
Okay, all right. So we'll be discussing that one in a couple weeks. We got a me coming up.
We know you love it.
We'll hit you up next time.
Yeah, and thank you for listening. And you know what? Have a spectacular day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.